From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz, presented this week by UCSB Arts and Lectures as the opening event of its 50th anniversary season. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Arlington Theater in Santa Barbara, California, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to have you back, Carl Castle, and we have got a great show for all of you today. But first, we need to correct a significant error we made last week as part of Wait Wait's ongoing, nay, obsessive coverage of the Snuggie. That's the mutant offspring of a blanket and a hospital gown. We mentioned a product called the Slanket, and we said that it was a ripoff of the Snuggie. Well, as dozens of loyal Slanket users and the founder of the Slanket company himself wrote to us to let us know, we had it backwards. In the evolutionary tree of dorky-looking sleeved blankets, the Slanket came first. So, we apologize to the Slanket-loving community, and we applaud all of those who wrote in for having the courage to come out as sleeved blanket wearers. Someday, you will have the same rights as normal people. Let's see who else we can offend. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, Peter. This is Jim Osted from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hey, Jim. How are things in Omaha?
They are fantabulous.
Really?
Yes.
That may be the first time that word, fantabulous, has been applied to Omaha. Not that it isn't great. It's just people don't talk that way, do they?
You betcha.
There we go. There we go. Excellent. Well, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to an author and humorist and the man behind everything you might find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, Jim.
Next, a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now. She's performing at the Wilbur Theater in Boston on October 2nd. Miss Paula Poundstone. And lastly, comedian, director, and bon vivant, Mr. Paul Provenza.
Hello, Jim.
Well, welcome to the show, Jim. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time? Of course, Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Here is your first quote.
All that was missing was a Congo line of hippies dancing through the aisles with a rousing rendition of Kumbaya.
That was Niall Gardner of the Telegraph newspaper of the United Kingdom. He was one of the many conservatives who did not like one world leader's speech at the UN this week. Who was it?
There were so many to choose from.
I know. This is the one the conservatives don't like. He's too conciliatory, too hopeful, too naive.
Barack Obama.
Yes, Barack Obama, the President of the United States. It's a familiar pattern by now. The President appears before foreign audiences, and conservatives get mad because they say that instead of doing cool stuff like challenging and criticizing and invading, all he does is apologize. And it's true, Obama did say that the United States wouldn't torture anymore, but maybe he went a little far when he said baseball was boring, apple pie fattening, and grandma's dentures clack when she chews. He also said that Beyoncé really should have won that award for her video.
I was personally disappointed to see our president go to the seat of world diplomacy and actually employed diplomacy.
It's so dull.
I know, it's so, I don't know. It just seems so 60s, you know what I mean?
Let's move on. Here's your next quote.
All of you are asleep. All of you are tired.
Now, that was another speaker at the UN this week, the one who followed the president, in fact, suddenly noticing something about his audience on or about the five-hour mark of his speech. Who was it?
Gaddafi.
Yes, Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi is the Libyan dictator. Despite 40 years in power, he cannot decide how he should spell his name in English. He spoke to the UN General Assembly right after Barack Obama, and that progression of acts, if you will, was like Frank Sinatra opening for a garbage disposal with a spoon in it. Mr. Gaddafi devoted most of his speech to ranting that the UN itself is an evil terrorist organization. That gave former ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, a warm tingly feeling in his tummy. Gaddafi went on so long, this is true, his interpreter walked off the job. Couldn't take it anymore. That's right, Gaddafi used up all the words there are. But Muammar Gaddafi did have praise for one person, and one person only, Barack Obama, our president, who he referred to as my son. At that moment, the Fox News headquarters in Midtown exploded. Sean Hannity was like, say that again, slower.
All I kept thinking around the, like, the 40-45 minute mark was, where is Kanye West at this event?
Yeah, right.
All right, here's your last quote, Jim.
One thing I wasn't prepared for in learning to dance was getting in touch with my feminine side.
That was a very unlikely contestant on the TV show Dancing with the Stars talking about the creepy preparation he had to do to get ready for his big debut. Who was it?
Tom DeLay,
yes. This week, the former House Majority Leader made his debut as a professional ballroom dancer, wearing a brown shirt, literally this time, with matching vest and cowboy boots. He looked like a UPS delivery man working the Argentinian pampas. Mr. DeLay danced with his partner to the classic song Wild Thing, and watching him skid about the stage on his knees and make these faces at the camera, we think that in attempting to get in touch with his feminine side, he just reached too far and got in touch with his aging but enthusiastic drag queen side.
Tom DeLay was really on Dancing with the Stars?
You missed this? He really won.
Wait, didn't he leave the
Congress.
In some form of
disgrace.
Yes.
And as you know, that'll keep you right off of Dancing with the Stars.
Absolutely.
Did he do I didn't see it. Did he do the white man's overbite? There's no way for a white man to dance to Wild Thing without doing the white man's overbite.
He danced to Wild Thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, heavens.
Although I have to say, when Tom DeLay says, I have to get in touch with my feminine side, it sounds like a vague form of sexual harassment, you know? He got in touch with his feminine side, and his feminine side sued him for inappropriate advances.
There's been a restraining order for years.
Carl, how did Jim do on our quiz?
Jim had a good game, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Jim wins our prize.
Well done, Jim.
Thank you.
Congratulations, and thanks for playing. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, social scientists say we are experiencing a revolution in human society caused by the social networking technology we all use. I know you use it, Facebook, Twitter, all that.
Yeah.
But new data shows that the primary use for all this technology is what?
The primary use for social networking is social networking.
No.
No.
I think it would be, but it's not.
Okay. Finding other people who eat raisins.
Is that an interest of yours?
No.
No. It seems that a lot of people like raisins.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No, that's not it either, actually. It's not the primary use.
No. Looking at pictures of naked women.
As a matter of fact, although they're not often naked, yes. Looking at pictures of women.
Oh, no, it doesn't have to be naked?
No.
Just looking at pictures of women.
Yes, looking at pictures of women. That's it. Why did Willie Sutton rob banks? Because that's where the money was. Why do men look at Facebook? Because that's where women put the pictures they take of each other while drunk. This finding, it's a byproduct of a Harvard Business School research program into how companies might better use social networking. In an unsurprising finding, the lead researcher calls, quote, surprising, the number one thing men do on Facebook is look at women they don't know. Number two, looking at women they do know. Number three is letting the site sit idle while they imagine how much better life would be if the women they do know were replaced with the women they don't know. Harvard Business School also found that looking at women was the number one reason men read Playboy, watch National Geographic Channel, and open their eyes. Thank you all very much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Judy Thomas.
Hey, Judy, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Longmont, Colorado.
Longmont, I've been there. That's not far from Denver, right?
Very, very close. Close to Boulder.
Okay, well, it's very nice to have you with us, Judy. Now, you're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Judy's topic?
Exit here to see the world's largest ball of earwax.
Okay.
So glad you called, Judy.
Very glad.
These are challenging times for folks in the travel industry, of course. This week, though, we read a story about attracting visitors that proves desperation can inspire brilliance. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of innovative ways to draw tourists. Choose that true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or your voicemail. Ready to go?
Ready.
First up, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
Hemet, California, lies just 35 miles east of Anaheim and has been hit hard by economic downturns. Elected on promises of economic recovery, City Council President Peter Luftig has introduced a bill to change Hemet's name to Disneyland, California. With its new name posted along Interstate 215 and directing traffic eastward, Luftig projects hundreds of tourists to mistakenly make their way to the former Hemet. We don't expect them to believe they've arrived at the Disneyland, but most of them will have to gas up before they head back to Anaheim and maybe grab a bite in one of our fine local restaurants as well. A Disney Corporation spokesman said, "It's crazy, they're out of their minds if they think they can get away with it." But Luftig is optimistic. "I'm proposing they put a Disney store right here near the gas station. They'll make millions off of parents trying to stop their kids from screaming and crying when they have to tell them they ain't there yet."
A proposal to change the drably named town Hemet to Disneyland, California, so as to fool people. Your next story promoting tourism by any means necessary comes from Paula Poundstone.
It's not that folks had stopped coming by the town of Lament, Oregon. It's that they had never come until the Country Kitchen restaurant began claiming that Twilight stars Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart dined there nightly during the making of the film. Now it's a family tourist destination, and the town is grateful. In fact, however, the stars were never there, and the film was made on the other side of the state. When tourists rolled in and no litigation followed, other businesses jumped on board. The Red Roof Inn now publicizes Sitting Bull's stay there after one of his most famous battles. As if that weren't tourist magnet enough, recently the town's Best Buy discovered that Thomas Edison purchased his first shredder in their store. Right up the street from the very parking lot where Buzz Aldrin piloted the Apollo 11 to its famous landing. One small step for man, one heck of a gravy train for the Lament, Oregon tourist industry.
A town in Oregon starts making increasingly outlandish claims about what happened there. And your last story of a tourist attraction comes from Tom Baudet.
Nothing says vacation fun like being pulled over in a strange state by a small-town police cruiser. This is the conclusion arrived at by Kelowna, Iowa Chamber of Commerce member Larry Moeller, who enlisted a pair of binoculars and County Sheriff Jerry Dunbar to, quote, catch a northbound out-of-state tourist, go up to the car and ask him if they have 20 hours to spend with us here in Kelowna, unquote. Several parties turned down these arresting and unscheduled colonoscopies, but But Ron and Sherry Cunningham of Sedalia, Missouri, went quietly. "Sounds good," said Ron and Sherry as they joined Larry and Jerry on a VIP tour of downtown Kelowna. Perks, such as being able to order from the lunch or dinner menu at the cafe, left the Cunninghams all smiles. "He probably pulled over the right people," says Ron. "We didn't have an agenda." Ron and Sherry were paroled sporting Ask Me About Kelowna, Iowa t-shirts, while Larry and Jerry scour the highway for their next visitor. Our submission to the town slogan contest? Kelowna, when you're going nowhere anyway.
All right. Let's review your choices. Three towns, three innovative tourism programs. Paul Provenza says it's Hemet that has the plan to change its name to Disneyland. Paula Poundstone says it's Lament, Oregon, which is just making up all kinds of things about itself. And Tom Baudette says it's Kelowna, Iowa, which is actually sending out people to chase down and arrest tourists to bring to town. Which of these is the real story?
The one about Kelowna, Iowa.
Oh, you seem so certain.
I'm just guessing. But it sounds pretty believable.
Okay, you believe that in Kelowna, Iowa...
I'm going to cross Iowa this summer, so I think I kind of see that happening.
Does this make you want to avoid or head towards Kelowna?
Probably avoid.
All right, well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to a journalist who covered the true story.
The sheriff and the Chamber of Commerce president were looking for a northbound, out-of-state tourist, pulled them over and charged them with a lack of small-town hospitality.
That was Matt Nelson. He filmed the sheriff pulling tourists over in Kelowna for the local ABC affiliate there. Congratulations.
All right.
You got it right.
Yay.
You earned a point for Tom Baudette. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done.
Thank you. This was great.
Thanks for playing with us today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And now the game where we ask people who are really enthusiastic about one topic about something else entirely. Most people, when they see, say, a monstrously large destructive tornado bearing down on them, go the other way, not Reed Timmer. Since a young age, he's been driving straight into tornadoes and other flavors of the wrath of God. And not only has he lived to tell about it, he now has a TV series, Storm Chasers, on the Discovery Channel. Reed Timmer, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thanks for having me.
Great for being here. So first question for you, Reed. When you are driving into a hurricane or toward a tornado, what are you thinking? Or let me put it another way. What are you thinking?
Well, when we first started, we actually had a car that was held together by duct tape. And, I mean, it was a major beater, so we didn't feel as comfortable driving towards tornadoes back then. But now we have a vehicle that's outfitted with bulletproof armor, bulletproof Lexan glass, and a hydraulic system. Basically, it looks like a big bulletproof red shoe.
Did you always love storms, weather as a kid? Was that like your thing when you were a little kid?
Yeah, I've been obsessed with them since I was 4 or 5 years old. And you know, I'd watch the weather on TV 12 hours a day. I'd get all fired up when severe weather would come.
Wait a minute.
And
as a 5-year-old, you sat and watched weather on TV for 12 hours a day?
Non-stop, yeah. Yeah, and I also have hours and hours of lake effect snow video from Michigan. That's where I got started in storm chasing.
So did you, like, invite girls home and say, hey, do you want to come home and see my lake effect snow video?
I tried desperately, but I was a member of the Science Olympiad team back then, so we didn't have too much luck with that.
Really? But now you're a big TV star, so I guess it worked out for you. So you've been doing this for a while. What's the closest you've ever come to going to the big weather center in the sky?
The closest we came was probably this year with our vehicle. And the most dangerous situation is when the tornado sits right on top of us and then intensifies. And we dropped to the ground, and I was trying to reach out and lift up my bulletproof glass, but a little rock got stuck in the groove, so I couldn't do it.
So you've got like some sort of suction thing holding you on the ground, this hydraulic system.
Yeah, it can drop to the ground. It has a rubber sheathing around the base theory should hold it down. Right.
Did you ever land on a witch?
We haven't been airborne yet, but...
Yeah.
But anyway, the window got blown out because I couldn't get the bulletproof glass up. The regular window went up, and it hit me in the face and then hit the passenger in the face, too. And I look over, and I see his ear just kind of flapping in the wind because it got cut a little
bit.
This is kind of gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, most of what we know about your business comes from the movie Twister, prior to seeing your TV series. Oh, you make the laugh. First question. In the movie Twister, of course, there were the good storm chasers and there were the evil storm chasers. Are you a good or an evil storm chaser?
I think we're definitely the good storm chasers.
Really?
Yeah.
As opposed
there
to
are some bad teams out there.
Really?
If you basically take some of the craziest people across the world and put them into one profession, I'd say it's storm chasing. So we have just about everybody out there.
Do you have a rival storm chaser played by a handsome but foreign actor who has better equipment than you but is somehow less morally upright that you is your rival? You're making all these sighing noises. Are you really tired of being asked about the movie Twister?
No, I actually love the movie Twister. It's one of my favorite movies.
Really? Why am I not surprised? There is a famous scene in that movie where a cow goes flying by. Does that sort of thing happen? Really odd things get lifted up into the air and fly by you?
Yeah, there's some crazy things. Actually, this year, and you'll see it on the Discovery Storm Chaser series, but in Kirksville, Missouri, we were parked next to this field of what looked like mini donkeys.
Yeah.
Just like a herd of mini donkeys. And we intercepted the tornado, and it continued east. It was heading straight for the production vehicle. And something fell on the top of the roof and caved it in 6 inches, and we thought it was one of those mini donkeys originally, but in hindsight, we found out it was a telephone pole that blew back off again.
Really?
Intense story, anyway. But no, we did return to that town afterward, and there was the herd was probably cut in half, I would say. So,
we are in Southern California, Santa Barbara, as we speak to you. I have lived here in Southern California, and I have lived in the Midwest, where I live now. And the people in Southern California say to people in the Midwest, you're crazy, you live there where there are tornadoes. And the people in the Midwest say to people in Southern California, you're crazy, you live where there are earthquakes. Who's crazier in your view?
I definitely say the earthquake people because they're not predictable at all.
Really?
I mean, I'd freak out if I experienced an earthquake, to be honest.
So
oh, yeah.
It would be like...
How many of us here in Southern California have been struck by mini donkeys during an earthquake? You know, if you're lucky, your cat runs around the living room. That's about the extent of it.
Well, Reed Timmer, we are delighted to have you here. We've asked you to play a game we're calling...
We're not going to say anything bad about her, are we?
Right down the road from here, in the hills overlooking the ocean, is a magical compound filled with trees and fountains and unicorns who are living their best life now. It's Oprah Winfrey's Western home. Seeing as we did not get an invitation to visit this time, we thought we'd spend some time with her metaphorically by asking you three questions about the life and times of Oprah Winfrey. Answer two questions right, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Answer none right, and she'll have you killed. Carl, who is Reed Timmer playing for?
Reed is playing for Mary Brown of Santa Barbara, California.
All right. Time, Reed, to chase the truth. Here's your first question. As she would tell you, as she often tells us, Oprah is not perfect, merely nearly so. Among her minor quirks, she says, are which of these? A, she simply cannot ever remember how to spell the word embarrassed. B, she has a fear of chewing gum. Or C, she cannot abide the taste of plastic cutlery.
I swear I've seen her chewing gum before, so...
You have?
I think I'm going to go... I think
did she fly by during a tornado?
I'd say maybe three.
You're going for three, that she can't abide the taste of plastic cutlery? Is that you're going for? You're going for C?
Yeah, I'll definitely go with C.
I'm afraid it was B. She has a fear of chewing gum.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know who you saw chewing gum. It wasn't Oprah Winfrey. She explained it... By way of childhood trauma, she says, her grandmother used to store used but still perfectly good gum on the counter for later use, and it freaked her out. Does not like the stuff. You still have two more chances here. Now, Oprah grew up poor, and she likes to stay in touch with the simple folk and their simple pleasures, but she does like to indulge herself on occasion, such as, for example, when she, A, commissioned Ralph Lauren to design a custom cashmere sweater for her dog, B, when she travels with an entourage, including her personal decorator, to redo her hotel rooms to her taste, or C, whenever she goes for a jog, she is followed by an aide with a foldable chair in case she gets tired.
I'd say B.
You're going to go for B? A personal decorator, she goes into a hotel room, and she has someone just redecorate it in her taste, so she doesn't have to spend a minute not surrounded by the objet that she loves. Is that your theory?
Well, I'm thinking you might be trying to throw me a curveball with the two B's in a row, so I think it could be B.
Really, that's where you're going with it?
He's using science.
Two B's in a row. I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if I would give you two B's in a row. It's too predictable. It's too much of a pattern.
Okay, we'll change it to A then.
You can do it for A, that she commissioned Ralph Lauren to design a custom cashmere sweater for her dog. You are correct. That's what she did. To be fair, the doggy came from a shelter. Now it lives like a king. All right, last question. This is for all the marbles. So many people have devoted themselves to the Oprah lifestyle, paying sincere tribute to her, including which of these? A, a woman in Missouri named her daughter Oprah, Oprah, Oprah Levine. B, a retirement home in Florida decided to spend a month only eating, doing, and thinking about things Oprah recommended. Or C, many guilds or player groups in World of Warcraft, that's the massive online fantasy warfare game, they call themselves Oprah Wind Fury.
I think I'm going to go with, it's definitely not A. I mean, it very easily could be, I guess, but I think I'd go with B on this one.
So you're saying like a retirement home in Florida, they just had an Oprah month where they only did things that Oprah said they should do.
Seems the most realistic.
You really don't like the World of Warcraft one?
How can a guy that chases storms be undecided? Don't you have to make quick decisions? Don't you have to, like, go for it? Like, okay, push the hydraulic thing. Don't you have to do it fast?
If you saw us in action, you'd see how many circles we actually drive in. We're all over the place.
That's the tornado, little buddy.
Well, it could be heading east, but then again, it might be west. But we went east yesterday, so I'm thinking maybe it'll be east again today.
It's not going to fool us with two easts in a row.
All right, we'll go with the Warcraft one.
You're going to go with the World of Warcraft one? You're right. Oprah Wind Fury. Name of a number of guilds in World of Warcraft. Carl, how did Reed Timmer do?
Well, he came through at the end, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Mary Brown. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. Reed Timmer laughs in the face of danger on Storm Chasers on the Discovery Channel. Their new season begins October 18th. Reed Timmer, thank you so much for being with us, and good luck.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Yesterday is a perfect day to chase tornadoes. To chase tornadoes. Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl forecloses on a sub-rhyme mortgage in our Listener Limerick Challenge game. If you'd like to play that game, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, Iranian activists were thrilled when on the night before their nemesis, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, gave his speech at the UN, the Empire State Building was lit up in green. That's the symbol of their protest. Turns out they shouldn't have been so proud. It was really lit up to honor what?
The anniversary of Wizard of Oz.
Yes, you're right. The 70th anniversary of the Wizard of Oz.
Was that a guess?
No, it wasn't a guess. I've been waiting to celebrate that for quite a while.
It's true. The movie The Wizard of Oz hit theaters exactly 70 years ago in 1939, which coincidentally is the same year Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says nothing whatsoever began happening in Germany. The demonstrators knew what was really going on. They had made the request to the building owners, and it had been refused, but they still stood under the green skyscraper and cheered, claiming it was an omen and that, quote, the universe is smiling and the stars are aligned, unquote. The universe neglected to do anything about any of the actual issues they're protesting, but whatever. Another group of protesters stood in front of a traffic light on 6th Avenue and shouted, "See, it supports us!" Okay, now it doesn't. Now it supports us! Paul.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Provenza.
Yes,
Paul,
sir.
There's a new book coming out on Bill Clinton's presidency. In addition to various historical insights, the book reveals that one night on a visit to Washington, then-Russian President Boris Yeltsin was discovered doing what?
Oh, boy, I could just go for days with this one. He was looking for an intern's phone number.
No. If you don't know, it's hard to hint. I mean, the only really way to predict this would be just to give Boris Yeltsin a lot of vodka and see what he does next. Did either of you hear about this?
No.
Was he dancing naked?
Close. He was wandering around the street in his underwear trying to hail a taxi so he could get a pizza.
No.
But all, who hasn't been there, huh? Huh? Just between you and me? Now, for our younger listeners, Russia hasn't always been ruled by authoritarian judo expert ex-KGB agents. Once it was ruled by famed drunk comedian Foster Brooks. Mr. Yeltsin, who by the time of his death 2 years ago was nothing but a huge distended liver with feet, was staying at Blair House near the White House during an official visit, and his Secret Service agents, tasked to protect him, found him on the street, standing there in his skivvies, trying to wave down a taxi, and they said, "What are you doing, Mr. President?" He said, "I want the pizza." They convinced him to come back inside by laying down a trail of pepperoni back to the front door. Turns out this kind of thing has happened before. A few years before that incident, back in Moscow, Yeltsin got in big trouble after he tried to lick the sauce off Gorbachev's forehead.
Yeah. And that stretch of Pennsylvania Avenue is hard to get a cab in your underwear.
You know this from experience?
Oh, boy.
Tom, there's a new book coming out about the marriage of Michelle and Barack Obama and how it fared during the long campaign for president. The book reveals that the future president, for all his love of campaigning, really disliked it when his supporters did what?
Oh, when they squeezed his bottom.
That's exactly right.
Ew.
After an event in Des Moines, and you know how rowdy people get in Des Moines, Mr. Obama got back in his car and said, quote, "Jesus, I wish they'd stop grabbing my ass," unquote. I can say that on the radio. I'm quoting the president. Apparently, the problem was some female supporters of Mr. Obama felt that, yes, they could. According to the book's author, Michelle Obama was offended by this comment from her husband. She felt that he really enjoyed it and was just kind of bragging. You know, I hate it when they throw themselves at me. In the book, by the way, we learn it was Michelle Obama who convinced her husband to adopt the campaign's famous slogan, "Yes, we can." He thought it was, quote, corny and childish. That's true. He preferred the slogan, quote, "Obama, it's what's for dinner."
Obama, don't touch my ass.
My body too bootylicious for you, baby.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our two upcoming shows in Pasadena, California. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Laura Dooley in Bellevue, Washington.
Hey, how are things in Bellevue?
We've had a beautiful week. It was 80 degrees plus for the first day of fall.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, Bellevue is not far from Seattle. What do you do there?
I am a pet sitter.
A pet sitter?
And a full-time mom.
How can you be a pet sitter in a fall? People bring their pets to you?
Sometimes, but most often I go to their houses and take care of their pets while they're on vacation.
I see. And have you had to take care, because I know Seattle can run to the weird, have you ever had to take care of any unusual pets?
I had a hamster die on me once, and I had to keep it in the freezer.
This is not good advertising for the pet care business.
Really? How did you know the hamster was dead?
It was lying on its back with its legs in the air at the bottom of the cage. Yeah. At least the owner warned me that he thought it was sick.
Was it dead when you came over?
Yes.
Wait a minute. So the hamster's dead, and the owner says, "Here, I'd like you to look after my hamster." And the hamster's lying there with its legs in the air. And you say, "Okay."
No, it was alive when we met the first time.
Oh, I see.
It didn't survive the second meeting.
I understand. Laura, welcome to the show. You're going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge. Carl Castle right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
I hope so.
Here is your first limerick.
Nigerian royals abroad can't rely on the mere grace of God. For now we'll sue Sony for calling us phonies. You can't simply call us a...
fraud?
Right. Very good. Now, you may have recently seen this PlayStation ad on TV. And the ad is a salesman is mischievously denying that the consoles are being lowered in price. When he's told that the price is listed on the internet, he says, quote, "You can't believe everything you see on the internet. Otherwise, I'd be a Nigerian millionaire by now." Nigeria's reaction, how dare you? The country of Nigeria demanded an apology from Sony for single-handedly destroying their country's pristine and unsullied reputation for fair dealing. Sony, sensitive to their concerns, quickly changed the ad. They issued an apology and, in a goodwill gesture, forwarded $50,000 and its banking information to the widow of former dictator Sani Abacha. Very good. Here is your next limerick.
Strap electrodes on dry fish's heads and then show them some wild photo spreads. Though their bodies are still, there's a post-mortem will, since their brains respond, though they are...
dead.
Right. Have you ever wondered how accurate all those scientific studies are? Well, they have down the road at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and they set out to prove that dead fish can respond to photographs. The scientists showed a group of dead fish a series of pictures of humans in various poses, and they asked the dead fish to identify the emotion shown in the photo. And what do you know? Sensors in the dead fish's brains lit up with activity when shown the photos. The scientists say the dead fish were definitely dead, and the results show that studies need to plan for a certain amount of false reports. We just take it as further evidence that the next time you have fish sticks for dinner, stab them a couple of times to make sure. Here is your last limerick.
Our test pilot quit. What a setback. The poor booger just missed the net. Smack. To test self-propulsion, we won't use compulsion. Let folks bid for flights with our...
Jetpack, yes! Inventor Glenn Martin had a jetpack he was just itching to test. And what better way to find test pilots than in an auction on eBay? The auction was open to anyone over 18 who had a driver's license and weighed less than 198 pounds and always wanted to strap what is, in essence, a huge Molotov cocktail to their back. Martin assured bidders that the jetpack is perfectly safe, but many paying to test the jetpack were put off by the notice, quote, "Your check must clear before you take off." Carl, how did Laura do in our quiz?
Oh, Laura was perfect. Peter, three correct answers. So, Laura, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Wow.
Thank you so much for playing, Laura.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Tom Baudet has the lead, Peter. He has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2. Paul Provenza, 1.
Okay. Paul, you're in third place. So you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick named Paul Kirk to replace blank in the Senate.
Teddy Kennedy.
Right. On Thursday, the UN Security Council approved a resolution calling for blank.
Nuclear disarmament.
Right. A Colorado man was arrested and charged with a conspiracy after he was caught with blank-making materials.
Bomb-making.
Right. The blog for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is getting a lot of attention, mostly because it's called blank.
Hey, look at me.
No. It's called The Pedophiles. The Pedophiles. Mad Men and 30 Rock were the big winners at this year's
Emmys.
Blank. Yes, this year's Emmys. Ballantine Books announced it would be publishing a memoir written by the beleaguered wife of love-struck Governor Blank.
John Edwards.
No, Mark Sanford.
Oh, yes.
A group of Florida police officers is in trouble for blanking during an undercover drug
raid. Playing Wii.
Yes, playing Wii bowling, to be specific. Police stormed a drug dealer's home near Lakeland, Florida, and they spent a grueling 9 hours meticulously searching for evidence. The reason it took so long? They were also playing with the drug dealer's Wii. Home security footage shows the officers getting in some frames of Wii bowling between bagging evidence and looking under couch cushions. Upon seeing the footage, one of the officers involved immediately apologized, saying, "I've never been so ashamed of myself. I should have picked up that spare." Carl, how did Paul do?
Paul had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 11 points, and Paul has the lead.
Well done. All right. Paulie, you're up next. Fill in the blank. A leaked report from General McChrystal warned President Obama of grave consequences if more troops are not deployed to blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. A severe dust storm turned the skies orange and brought city life in blank to a standstill.
Sydney, Australia.
Right. A study released this week shows that communities with smoking bans have a huge drop in the number of blank.
Cigarettes sold.
No, heart attacks. Former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina launched her campaign for governor with the slogan blank.
Carly for president.
No. Carly Fornia Dreamin'.
Oh, wow.
Good luck with that, y'all. The ceremonial first pitch at a Yankees game this week was thrown out by Bronx native and Supreme Court Justice blank.
Sonia Sotomayor.
Right. After being away for a month, a British couple returned to their house in Northwest England to find their blank had been stolen.
Their house.
No, their garden. The whole thing. The Wood family says not only was their garden stolen, it was found perfectly reassembled next door. When asked by police, their neighbors claimed they bought all the items, including a handmade wooden tool shed, a stone path, several pots of flowers, and 8 hanging baskets from a mysterious third party they could not identify. They claimed to have absolutely no knowledge where the items came from. They were found looking jealously over the fence at the Woods' pets. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. She now has 8 points, but Paul Provenza still has the lead with 11.
All right. How many, then, does Tom need to win this game?
4 to tie, 5 to win.
All right. All right, Tom, here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. 8 days of rain caused severe flooding in blank this week.
Georgia.
Yes, Atlanta, Georgia. Leaders from around the world gathered in blank for the G20 summit.
Pittsburgh.
Yes, the World Health Organization announced that manufacturers will produce only 3 billion doses of the blank vaccine, not enough for the whole world.
H1N1.
Right. President Obama met with blank only a day after indicating he wanted him to give up his reelection bid.
Governor Patterson.
Right. An Italian mafia boss is accused of extorting money from people by threatening them with his blank.
Threatening him with his, pizza sauce.
His pet crocodile. After a fall at his Northern Virginia home, West Virginia Senator blank was hospitalized for 2 days.
Robert Byrd.
Right. On Tuesday, the FDA officially banned the sale of all flavored blanks.
Cigarettes.
Right. A resident of an apartment block in Manchester, England can breathe a sigh of relief now that blank has been captured.
Geez, this is in England. It's probably that 12-foot boa constrictor.
It was, in fact.
No.
Keith the toilet snake.
I guessed that. That was a guess.
You even got... You even got the length right. Keith is, in fact, 3 meters long. That's about 12 feet. A female boa constrictor abandoned by her former owner, so she took up residence in the toilet pipes. No one could catch her, even though she visited neighboring apartments often enough that residents were forced to pile bricks on their toilet seats to keep her away. Their happiness at Keith's eviction was tempered by snake experts in England who shrugged at news of the lurking toilet snake. They said, well, that's not really unusual. Helpful hint for the audience, never use the bathroom in England. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win? I think he did.
Well, Tom needed four to tie, but Tom had seven correct
answers. Oh, my goodness.
14 more points, giving him 17 points, and Tom is this week's champion.
Did you really guess 12-foot boa constrictor?
I had no idea.
Have you ever used the toilet in Manchester, England? Because
no. No, and I never will.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what offers Muammar Gaddafi will get after his hit debut this week at the UN. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. Our web guru is Beth Novi. We'd like to thank engineer Marcia Caldwell from NPR West, the Arlington Theater stage crew, and Shadowfax Audio. Thanks also to Celesta Bilici and Heather Silver at UCSB. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what offers are coming Muammar Gaddafi's way? Paul Prevenza.
What else? Dancing with the Stars.
Paula Poundstone.
He will have his own series of tent and RV parks here in the States.
And Tom Baudet.
Anyone who can fill 90 minutes with nonstop, utter nonsense needs an afternoon American talk radio show.
Well, if Muammar Gaddafi ends up doing any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Prevenza, Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet. Thanks to our fabulous audience here in Santa Barbara, California. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.